This is I Choose Life News and Views, sponsored by Indiana Right to Life and Allen County Right to Life, committed to defending innocent human life for all people of all ages. Your hosts are Kathy Humbarger, Abigail Eschelbach, and Scott Kump.
Welcome to I Choose Life News and Views. I'm Kathy Humbarger.
I'm Abigail Eschelbach.
And I'm Scott Kump. I Choose Life News and Views is a joint project of Allen County Right to Life, Indiana Right to Life, and Bot Radio Network in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Today on the show, we have a very special guest with us. Her name is Destiny Herndon De La Rosa, and she is from a part of the pro-life movement that's beginning to gain speed and that maybe some of you haven't heard about before. She established a group called New Wave Feminism and is here to share with us today their mission, what they look like in action, and their goals for the pro-life movement. Welcome, Destiny.
Yeah, thanks, Abigail. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, we're definitely glad to have you. Now, since this is radio, sometimes we have people call in like you're calling in today. Where are you actually located right now?
We are actually based out of Dallas, Texas.
So you went up to the National March for Life not too long ago, a couple weeks ago, and you stayed even though there was a blizzard?
Yeah. So we knew that there was going to be a blizzard coming, and it was one of those things where it was like hitting right at 1 o'clock and the march starts around then. And so as we were marching, the snow started falling and coming in. A lot of leaders had decided to go ahead and head out because they had commitments at the West Coast Walk for Life, which is the following Saturday after the march in D.C. on Friday. But we decided to stay and realize that we would probably get snowed in, and we did. We ended up being there an extra 3 days.
Oh, wow.
But it was the most amazing experience. And I feel like it was absolutely one of those things where we were meant to be there, because a lot of times I think the media writes this narrative that the pro-life movement is a bunch of like old, you know, white religious males, and that's all it is. And we certainly have a number of wonderful men who are involved in the movement, but there is also an overwhelming number of young people, and especially young women, who are becoming very, very vocal about this. And so because so many people had left and the march was quite a bit smaller this year, I think it kind of gave some prominence to the pro-life feminist movement, and it was really cool. We normally kind of stand along the side of the march route, and so as it goes by, more of the secular groups jump in there, just because we think it's, again, it takes away that narrative that the media tries to portray, which is this is a religious group against a bunch of, you know, radical feminists. And so we like to be there to say, like, no, it's young women who are wanting to dialogue about this issue. And this year, it was completely by accident, but and my group is secular, but I personally am a believer. So it was one of those things where I can look back and see how God's hand had kind of ordained a lot of this stuff. But we accidentally started before the official march started.
Oh.
And so it was completely an accident. But again, it was something that we might even try to do in future years, because we were up there with Students for Life. We were the very first ones to start marching. I had walked out to the middle of the street because I saw the police barricade go by, and walked out there, and it was like Students for Life all of a sudden was like, oh, I guess we're starting. And before we knew it, it was like everybody started getting in the street. And so Kristen, who runs New Wave Feminist with me, you know, brings our banner out, and I was like, I guess we're marching now. So we end up marching at the front of the march. And I don't know if y'all are familiar with this, but usually every year a group called Stop Patriarchy is out there, and they have these big signs that say abortion on demand without apology.
Yeah.
They're incredibly aggressive. Mm-hmm. They wear these pants with blood on them that's supposed to, you know, symbolize botched abortions. And so they try to do this thing where they block the march, and then, of course, after it, they claim that they have stopped us from marching. But really, they actually stop us about 10 feet from where we normally stop anyway.
So
it's kind of pretty tricky. But so they cross the street like that. And when we got there with Students for Life, the officers, because we have a permit for our march, give them 3 warnings. And then once those 3 warnings happen, they actually have to move over to the side. And because we were up there first, we kind of cleared them out of the way. And so a dear friend and her children were marching with us, and she said, you know, about 20 minutes into, you know, them getting cleared out of the way and all this, she looked around, and she's like, this is so sad, because of the blizzard, there were only about 500 people there. And she just really was disheartened that so few people had showed up for the March for Life. And she said, and then that's when it was like out of the movie, all of a sudden the actual march with, you know, the tens of thousands of people turns the corner. And
she's
like,
so
here
funny.
They are. Like, here's the march. So it's actually something that we've been talking to Students for Life in the future of maybe trying to do that again, because, again, then the media doesn't get that picture of because I think the thing that always gets me is with pictures, you can't hear the screaming. You can't hear the aggressiveness right. that's out there. And if you've ever been there in front of the Supreme Court, it is usually a very kind of hostile environment. And so the media ended up getting pictures of pro-life feminists up against these radical feminists. And we were just smiling and full of joy and looking as happy as we could. Again, something that we hadn't planned to do. But when you get there, it's just, it's a really cool experience to mm-hmm. be standing in front of the Supreme Court with so many other pro-lifers fighting for women and their children, you know. And so that joy just ends up radiating. And you see such a stark contrast between the pro-life side and the pro-choice side at that point.
Yeah, that's really wonderful. So you had, I was reading your blog, New Wave Feminist blog, and you were talking about the march, and you were talking about how you had a little person who you brought with. Can you tell us a little bit about her and about how she's becoming an activist, and especially because of her experience in the March for Life this year?
Yeah, absolutely. So every year I try to take one of my kids. I have four. So last year I took my 15-year-old son. And, you know, he's the one who I really wanted to be an activist because I got pregnant with him at 16. He's who I always kind of claim made me a feminist. And so I was really excited to take him last year. And I don't know if maybe it's a boy thing, but for him, it was kind of one of those where it's like, yeah, we'll go stand in the snow and march, but I don't know if it really sunk in. Mm-hmm. So this year I took my 9-year-old daughter, Eiffel. And Eiffel, it's kind of bizarrely, she's more attracted to the pro-life message than I think any of my other kids. I think she's always been inclined towards it because when I was pregnant with her, they found a spot on her heart in my sonogram the day we found out she was a girl. And they said, you know, there's a chance she might have Down syndrome. Oh. Now, a lot of kids have it who don't have Down syndrome, but 100% of children who have Down syndrome have this spot on their heart. And my doctor at the time kind of was very angry with me for not having the blood work done, because you can get blood work done around 14 weeks that right. will tell you whether or not the child has Down syndrome. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, it's not going to make a difference at all to me. Like, if this is the child that God's given me, then that's the child God's given me. Yeah. And so Eiffel is always kind of connected with that. And so this year, getting to take her to the March for Life, it was a really neat experience. But in the blog post, I wrote about how we were hanging out with these Irishmen and an Irish woman. And they're so funny because they tend to just swear a lot. I don't know if it's an Irish thing. Maybe they don't have the same bad words we do. So my little daughter kept saying, like, I don't want to hang out with them because they're always saying bad words. And I love her heart so much. And I love that it's something where it's like, she's very much my rule follower child. And I've never even made a big deal out of bad words, but she knew mm-hmm. that this is not something she should hear. And so yeah. we're up in the hotel room. We were about to go have dinner with them a second night. And she said, I just don't want to be around them because they're always saying bad words. And you know, and they hurt me. The words hurt me. And I'm more libertarian leaning in my beliefs these days. And it's one of those things where I think we have a lot of feminists who talk about trigger warnings and safe spaces and how, you know, words just are scary things. And yeah. words are powerful, but they can't hurt us. Hearing a bad word does not physically hurt you in any way. And so I asked her, do you feel hurt when you hear the word abortion? Because some cuss word, you know, that really doesn't mean much should have so much less power than when you hear the word abortion. And she kind of paused and couldn't really explain to me, but she said, I know the other one's a bad word, but what really is abortion? And I had taken it for granted because I thought, I don't know, being the daughter of an activist and she's seen the images and mm-hmm. she knows what I do for a living, that she kind of knew more about abortion than she did. So I actually walked her through the procedures that, you know, this is when most women have it at this gestational stage, and this is how the abortion is performed. And then there's later term abortions, and women might get them because of anomalies or, you know, there's a myriad of reasons the woman might be scared and doing this. And I, with my children, at least, I've always wanted this to be something that they make up their mind about. Mm-hmm. I don't want it to be a matter of me brainwashing them and, you know, giving them the talking points. I always think about those little kids that you see in front of like the Westboro Baptist Church things with like yeah. the horrible signs. And I'm like, right. wow, those poor kids. And so I want my children to come to this conclusion on their own. So I really do try to give them the argument for why a lot of women might be scared and feel like this is their only option. And time and again, with each of my kids, it's like they've heard the argument. They've understood the reason why women might turn to abortion. But each time they're like, but that's terrible. A child's dying. A woman should never be in a position where she has to choose between, you know, her livelihood and her child's life. And I think when we trust our kids to kind of understand it, you know, they're not jaded and cynical yet. They don't feel the need to rationalize why taking another human being's life is justifiable. They honestly see it for what it is. And so having that conversation with Eiffel was kind of the pivotal moment, because I think at that point she just said, why is this happening? Why are we letting this happen? And she very much has a heart for women. She understands how scary it would be for them. But I think being so young, she also can kind of relate to that child, especially since she's a child who might have been aborted had someone else been pregnant with her, you know, yeah, and found that spot on the heart. So, it was absolutely a wonderful experience taking her. And, you know, next year is supposed to be her little sister's turn. But I told her that if she proves to me this year that she has a passion for the pro-life movement, I'll take her next year too.
Well, that's good. Yeah, I find that's true too. With the small children relating to the babies, I do presentations for third grade classes on fetal development, and I pass around these fetal models that we have, and they can hold them. And I always send them home with one of the 12-week models. Every kid gets to take home a 12-week model because they just love them so much.
Yeah.
Even the boys, some of the boys are like, ew, what's this? But even those boys, after a little bit, they come around and then they want to make a blanket and they want to make sure that this baby has a safe place on their dresser to be. And even smaller than that, at church, I had this one little boy, I think he's two, his name is Simon, and he was bringing one of the bigger fetal models back up. I think it was like the 22-week-old one, and he's just holding it so close to his chest. He didn't want to give it back to me. He wanted to take it home. They really, I think the little kids, yeah, they really do identify with those babies, and they're like, no, this is a little person.
So many of them have seen their own sonogram photos that look like that. And, you know, thanks to the medical advances, I think this generation is very, very aware that that is a human being that's very much alive inside their mother's stomach. You know, I mean, I think they're very kindred just because it wasn't too long ago they were there. They can see the pictures. They can see the, you know, 3D, 4D videos or whatever of being in the womb. And yeah, I think that's a really cool thing where it becomes undeniable. And generations past have been able to claim ignorance, but this generation will not be able to say that they did not know what abortion was.
And once you realize that that's, for some reason, the appearance, it looks like a baby there. I can see the baby in the ultrasound. Once you hit that point, there's no going back. In order to deny that, you really have to bend your own conscience over backwards in order to say, no, it's not a baby anymore. So that's a huge leap.
I would say, I think that that's kind of a scary point that we're at also with the abortion industry, where they're realizing they can no longer deny it. Mm-hmm. And so you'll hear them saying, yeah, it is a baby. It is a baby. But we still think the woman's life is more valuable at this point, and that she should be able to have the right to choose. And I think that's the scary part as a society, when we're so callous that we can admit fully this is a child. It's a child who probably could even, you know, at certain gestational ages live outside of the womb, but it still doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It all comes down to the whim of the mother and whether or not she wants to keep the child.
Yeah, I was reading an article just, I think, last week, probably, that this woman was saying, no, we know it's a child, and we know even that it's a person. But it's a human life that's worth sacrificing for my life, which that just about blew me off my chair when I read that. And it just is amazing.
Horrifying.
Yeah, it's really crazy. So feminism, especially from the pro-life movement, looking at feminism, it kind of has a negative connotation now. But new wave feminism, tell us how that's different than normal feminism and what tracks you're making and what waves you're making in the pro-life movement.
Yeah, absolutely. So new wave feminism, and the reason we decided not to just be, you know, a pro-life group is because I think there's actually a lot of places in the pro-life movement where we are looking at the end game. Abortion is the end game. It is a symptom of a society that's very broken in the way that it treats women and cares for women. And so when you start to look at the whole picture, you start to see that from a very young age in this country, girls learn that their power comes from their sexuality, you know, which is completely, completely incorrect. But we have images and Hooters on every corner and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And so I think it becomes something that young women feel like this is where their power comes from. If you pick up a Cosmo magazine, which believe it or not, declares itself a feminist magazine,
right?
Which is all about how to please your man in 72 different ways. This is a message that young women are constantly being fed. And what ends up happening is when you have women who are constantly fed this message, their sexuality is the most powerful thing about them. At the same time, they're being told, you're not pretty enough, you're not skinny enough, your teeth aren't wide enough, you know, your skin's not clear enough. Here, let us sell you all this junk to fix you. you end up with girls who are really kind of broken and high anxiety levels. They're more prone to depression. They have low self-esteem. It's very easy then for their male counterparts to prey upon that self-consciousness. Mix in the fact that we have so many more broken families, everything else. And of course, mix in the fact that we have boys and girls who are being exposed to pornography at younger and younger ages. Mm-hmm. You create this perfect storm of people who really, truly don't understand intimacy or how to connect with one another on a physical level. It is all about just pleasure and exploiting another human being and using another human being. And so when you grow up viewing porn and everything else, it's just, this is going to gratify me. I'm going to use this person for pleasure and that's it. And then, you know, that carries into how you treat other human beings. So we find these girls who end up getting pregnant at 14, 15, 16 years old. Obviously, this is not something they're ready for, but here they just had someone use them basically to get to this point. It's so much easier to sell that girl, that broken, self-conscious, emotional, depressed, anxiety-ridden girl an abortion than it is someone who, you know, might understand the value of human life. She's been sold so many lies that go into this. And we always say, like, abortion is not created in a vacuum. So you kind of have to look at each lie that has led her to this point where she views killing her child as a merciful choice. I don't know if you've ever worked in pregnancy centers, but that is absolutely the way so many of these young women view it. Like, I'm not good enough. I can't bring a child into this world. I can't parent a kid. And when you link that up to the fact that that's being sold as the feminist choice, it's infuriating. The fact that feminism in 2016 is telling a woman, you can't.
Yeah.
You can't carry this child and have, you know, good livelihood. You can't carry this child and finish school. You can't carry this child and go to college. You can't choose life and also keep your job. It's a bunch of I can't. And so pro-life feminism is saying you can. Like, we're going to be here. We are the sisterhood that's going to surround you and help you. And we're going to take those obstacles out of the way so that you can choose life for your child and livelihood for yourself. And you can still be successful.
Yeah, that sounds great. I'm so glad that you're here. If you're just joining us now, this is I Choose Life News and Views. And thanks for tuning in. I'm Abigail Aschelbach, and our guest today is Destiny Herndon De La Rosa, and she is the founder of New Wave Feminism, which is a pro-life group and is really coming to their own inside the pro-life movement, and especially in the face of what has typically been feminism, which is this kind of calloused and hard and aggressive pro-choice movement. So a little bit about your group is what we were just hearing, but what really brought you into the pro-life movement?
So I faced my own unplanned pregnancy when I was 16 years old, and it was something that of anybody I knew better than to do this, because my mom had actually gotten pregnant with me at 19 at University of Texas, a very liberal college town. Her parents were ministers, so she had to, you know, first of all, tell them that she was not a virgin, and second, that she was pregnant and needed to come home to Dallas. And just looking back and knowing the strength and courage it took for her to choose life for me, I think I've never had the option to not be pro-life because of that. And then on top of that, though, like, it led to a rocky childhood. My father chose not to be a part of our life, and so I knew better. I knew better than to make that same mistake. But again, kind of how I was talking about, you know, this Cosmo generation that I was raised in, I often say that, you know, I had to walk through the fire and be burned by it to understand what it is that most women go through today. So I was very susceptible to becoming sexually active at a younger age and using it as a way to find validation. And so I ended up pregnant with my son when I was 16 years old, and his father took off. It was, and he had been my boyfriend for about a year at the time. So it was a little bit shocking, but I had a wonderful family that obviously supported me. They were sad for me. They were so sad that I was going to have to go through this, because my mom certainly knew it wasn't easy. And she basically said, like, this is kind of the end of your childhood. Now you're an adult and you're going to have to grow up and start working. And, you know, you're really going to have to become a mother to this child. It wasn't a matter of the grandparents who are going to raise the kid while I went to school type thing. And I will forever be grateful to them for that, because they really, you know, kind of encouraged me to step up, which is what I needed. And it's definitely what my son needed. And for the first 6 months, I didn't know whether or not I was going to place him for adoption or choose to parent. And by the end, it kind of became, what's the more selfish choice? Is it selfish for me to place him for adoption because, you know, I want to go back to pretending like I'm just a normal high schooler? Or would it be selfish for me to keep him? Because am I doing it just because I know how heartbroken I would be to have to place him for adoption? And in the end, I just realized with the amount of family support that I had, I was in a very blessed position and I was able to go ahead and parent him. But it was also something that gave me a heart for birth mothers. I can't even begin to fathom just the amount of selflessness that it takes for women to place their children for adoption. But during that time when I was in school, I decided to go back to my regular school. So I returned from summer, you know, I think I was 5 or 6 months pregnant, and I look back at pictures and I look like such a baby with big, like belly on me. And I remember the first day back, this girl came up to me and she said, oh yeah, I was pregnant over the summer too. And it like took me a second to register, like, you were pregnant over the summer too? Mm-hmm. You know, what happened? And she said, yeah, I decided to have an abortion. And I looked at her and I said, oh, so you're a baby killer? You killed your baby and you're proud of it? And I felt really good about saying that to her, which is terrible. And, you know, she cussed at me and kind of stormed off. And this is the time when I would say I was relating to that unborn child. I was very much had the baby, you know, the fetus tunnel vision, as we call it in the pro-life movement, where it was like I was very focused on the fact that her child had died and I could have been that child because my mom was only 19 when she was pregnant with me. And there was just so much anger.
Yeah.
And so I went home and I told my mom that I had said this and I expected her to like give me a pat on the back or something. And I remember immediately she said, so her next abortion she'll have in your honor. And I mean, just the amount of conviction I felt of, wow, you're exactly right. I handled that the wrong way. And in the way that God works, the very next day I had an almost identical situation, except for it was a girl that was much scarier. She was like, had bullied me through all of junior high. And she was like really awesome, tough chick. And I remember she came up to me and said almost the same thing. I was pregnant over the summer too. And I didn't know what to say because I didn't think I was going to be given this opportunity so quickly.
Right.
And I said, so how far along were you? Like, I just, that was the only thing I could think to ask. And she said, I don't know, like 12 weeks. And I said, 12 weeks, that's like fingernails and toenails. Because here on my end, I'm getting the baby center update,
right.
You know, telling me all the fetal development and your baby's the size of a kumquat this week.
Yeah.
And so this fact just comes flying out of my mouth without thinking first. And I saw in that moment, this girl go from thinking that she had just made a choice, she'd gotten rid of a blob of tissue, to suddenly realizing she had killed a child, that she had terminated a pregnancy that was her child. And it was developed enough to have fingernails and toenails. And her face just went white. She slammed her hands down on the table. She cussed at me and stormed off. And I was like, okay. So basically, I got the exact same reaction.
No matter what.
But the difference was the first girl I judged and condemned. The second girl, I just gave information to. And honestly, it was information she should have had before she ever walked through the doors of an abortion clinic.
Yes.
And I think for me, that's the moment that I realized, like, I want to make sure that women know what they're doing. Even if abortion is illegal in this country, they will still be happening. That's something that we just have to realize. It has to become a cultural change where it is unthinkable and it is unnecessary. And we've removed all of the fear and obstacles so that women feel like they can choose life. But I think one of the biggest obstacles we have is denial and this lie that the abortion industry has given to women that this is something that's liberating and empowering for them. And this is a right. And, you know, if it's legal, it can't really be that bad of a thing. And unfortunately, too many of them go in there and choose not to really understand the developmental stages. They don't want to look at the sonogram. And so if we can get that information to people earlier, you know, I love what you're doing with third graders. I think that's amazing because I think once you know that that's a human being, you have respect for that life. The problem that I think we see nowadays is they know it's a human being somewhere in the back of their mind, but they don't want to admit it. So they're just going to believe these lies. And I think that's why you end up seeing so many women on the pro-choice side who are very vocal and emotional when they're arguing this stance because they do have a past abortion in their life. And, you know, I think it's really easy for us to sometimes say, oh, they're just, you know, they're baby murderers, like I did to that one girl. It's very easy for us just to cut them down and think they're terrible people. But the fact that they are so emotionally vocal, I guess, in defending the fact that this was not a child, I think speaks to their humanity. Because if they were monsters, they would say, yeah, it's a child, I killed it, it's great, I don't even care. But they're not. Instead, they're not trying to convince us when they say it's not a baby. They're trying to convince themselves. Mm-hmm. And so at the March for Life, when we saw Stop Patriarchy, one of the chants they actually do, they do a chant saying, I love my abortion. So you know that right off the bat, most of them are post-abortive. You could see these women on the verge of tears. But one of the chants that they do is, a baby's not a baby till it pops out, which, like, you probably think I'm making up, but they actually say this chant. And we're like, is that a Dr. Seuss book we've never heard of? Like, this is ridiculous. And not to mention, it's in complete denial of science and biology to say that there's some magical sprinkles that happen, like as the baby is exiting the mother's womb and then suddenly it's a human being. Nobody truly believes that, because at the end of the day, we do understand the science and biology behind human development and fetal development. So, you know, just trying to get that information to women is truly empowering for them. And I think that's kind of the future of the movement. We have science and technology on our side.
Yeah. So if people want to check you out, want to see what else you're doing, where can they go to find information about New Wave Feminists?
So they can check out our website, which is newwavefeministsplural.com. Probably the best place to find us, though, is on Facebook. Honestly, I'm 32, have 4 children. We've got a lot of social media sites that we've been told we have to set up to reach all the youngins. And I keep track of zero of them most of the time. We have a Twitter and an Instagram. I still haven't learned a Snapchat, but those are places where I update them like once a month. But our Facebook page is updated pretty regularly. We link to our blogs and pictures and different social media events and demonstrations we do and stuff like that.
And then you also have a book coming out that we should be watching for. What's the name of that?
Yeah, so I mean, it's just basically going to be a book on New Wave Feminism that I'm writing with Kristen Hatton, who writes for Live Action as well, and she runs New Wave Feminist with me. And it's basically going to be kind of explaining the tenets of New Wave Feminism and what exactly this means. At the end of the day, New Wave Feminism is pretty much common sense feminism. It's the feminism that so many women want right now, because we see these big anti-feminist movements where, I don't want to be a feminist because y'all are angry and you're word police and you hate men and everything else. And so this is the feminism that I think so many women have been craving for so long, which it's about strength and embracing our female, inherent female superpowers, as I call them, which is our reproductivity, our fertility, all of these different things that make us unique. Because I think we're kind of done buying into the lie that we're going to settle for equality. Nobody should be settling for equality. Men should be the best they can be, and women should be the best they can be, because when women are better, the world's better.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Thanks so much for joining us today. I look forward to seeing your book come out.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to I Choose Life News and Views. If you have questions about this program, or if you'd like to support the fight for life, please call 260-471-1849 or go to ichooselife.org, because without the right to life, no other rights matter.